Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Two-Footed Podcast is brought to you by EPLindex.com and our presenting sponsor, Liberty Shield. Liberty Shield is a VPN provider. A virtual privacy network allows you to go online, change your location, access things you're geo-blocked from, while keeping your data safe. So, as an example, if you are a UK expat and want access to BBC iPlayer to watch Match of the Day, or ITV Hub, or All Four, but you get that message that says this content is not available in your location, a Liberty Shield VPN gets you around that block, allows you to watch whatever you want on those services while also keeping your data safe. And it goes further than that. It allows you to open up Netflix's entire library by just changing your IP address. Liberty Shield is the number one rated VPN provider on Trustpilot with 5-star ratings across the board. So go to libertyshield.com right now, use the code EPL25 and get either the hardware package or the software package. The hardware package is a router that you plug into your existing router, and any item you want to change the IP address on, be it your phone or your television, you connect that to the new Liberty Shield router. All other items can remain connected to your existing router. There's also a software package, which is instantly downloadable to your device and you can get using straight away. Again, libertyshield.com, EPL25 for 25% off at checkout. We're also brought to you by Home of Hopcroft, a giftware and homeware company located in Scotland but shipping worldwide. Check out homeofhopcroft.co.uk and do check out the EPL Index and Anfield Index shops, which you'll find on Etsy. Use the codes EPL10 or RED10 for 10% off at checkout. And lastly, do remember to check out A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. That podcast is on this feed before every Premier League match week. And then the EPL Roundtable, hosted by Kevin DeVries, on its own EPL Roundtable feed. So just search EPL Roundtable in your podcast device. And that's out after every match week. Now, on with the show. What's good, boys and girls? Two-Footed Podcast. Today is Thursday. It is the 25th of April. Pod today is probably going to be a little bit shorter than normal, and tomorrow's will be a little bit shorter because I'm having to record both today. I have a wedding tomorrow that, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff. Right. We had 4 games in the Premier League last night. Wolves 0. Bournemouth 1, Antoine Semenyo with the only goal of the game. Wolves will likely feel hard done by, and I think rightly so. I think the disallowing of the Hwang goal is a nonsense. Yes, Matthias Cunha's arm flails a little bit. It in no way impedes Joao Gomes. In no way impedes him. He immediately goes straight to the next man to make a challenge. He's not impeded at all. Quite a bit of play happens then. The ball is crossed in. It's a great finish by Hwang. I think that's a poor decision. Milos Kerkhoff sent off on 79. It seemed a little harsh. I didn't think it was a red card foul, but couldn't argue with it too much. I think they were hard done by. They had a second goal disallowed. Lovely little lifted pass by Boubacar Traore to Max Kilman. But he was just offside, and he was offside, so that one was fair enough. But yeah, I think Wolves will feel a little bit hard done by, but a really good win for Bournemouth. Crystal Palace 2, Newcastle 0. Again, I think the tune will feel a little bit hard done by, but Palace absolutely great value for their win. Mateta opens the scoring on 55. Palace had been by far the better team to that point. Mateta opens the scoring. It's a really well-worked goal. Eze plays it into Mateta. He lays it off to Ayew and spins the defender. Ayew plays the first-time ball back into his path. Great finish. Lovely, lovely goal. Palace have scored some great goals in the last few weeks. You can really see Glasner's input now coming out of that team. You can really see the tactical ploy coming out of that team. And they're getting some very, very good performances. It was big last night to have Richards back in their back three. If they get Guehi back, all of a sudden that defensive line looks a lot more solid. Munez is playing well. Mitchell's playing well. Wharton has settled into the Premier League like he's been here for years. And credit to Will Hughes, who never became the player that he was expected to be as a young player. Like when he was Wharton's age, that's what he was. He was that level of talent and he was tipped for the top, but he had a horrible knee injury. He never quite recovered fully from it. He's gone on to have a very good career. Let's be clear on that, but not quite the career that he should have had. He would have played, I believe, for a big six club, if not for that horrendous knee injury. But he has transformed himself into a proper grafting midfielder and gets through a lot of work. Now, he was very lucky last night. He fouls Sean Longstaff. Longstaff breaks into the box, cuts across Hughes. Hughes definitely pulls at him. Longstaff goes down. The referee doesn't give a penalty, which I was quite surprised by. Quite surprised by that, to be fair. There was another incident where Newcastle thought they'd gotten a penalty. And it wasn't given either. So, or am I thinking of the same one twice? Maybe I'm thinking of the same one twice. Either way, I thought Toon should have had a penalty on the Longstaff one, which would have made it 1-1. Palace didn't care. They kept playing, and Will Hughes sets up Mateta, who finishes to make it 2-0. He's in great form at the moment. They're playing very well. Eze is playing out of his mind. Elise is looking dangerous in the appearances that he's getting. And like I said, that defensive midfield is looking solid. It's looking solid. They've got Guehi to come back into it. They've got Doucouré to come back into it. If Palace could keep this team together, let's say they go Guehi, Anderson, Richards as a back three, Munez, Wharton, Doucouré and Mitchell across. Elise and Eze behind a striker. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And Dean Henderson's a good goalkeeper. They've obviously also got Sam Johnston, who's a good goalkeeper. You might prefer a different left wing back, one who's more attacking, and you could maybe slide Mitchell to left side centre back. That could work as well for them and give them a bit more balance. But all things considered, like if Palace can keep this team together, which is very unlikely, very, very unlikely, I think they'd be a top half team next season. Manchester United 4, Sheffield United 2. United get lucky in some ways, but in other ways fully deserved their win. United had been the dominant team for the first 35 minutes, and then Andre Onana plays an underhit pass across his own box. Jadon Bogle latches onto it and finishes well. Harry Maguire equalises with a lovely flicked header 7 minutes later. go to half time 1-1, and you're kind of wondering how on earth that United aren't like 3-1 up. Fotheringham had made some really good saves to his credit. 50 minutes, Ben Brereton Diaz capitalizes on just some lax defending by United on the edge of their box and finishes well off a cutback. 61 minutes. I'm confused as to what happens here. Harry Maguire goes down. There's minimal contact. Minimal contact. He goes down in the box. And Dalot puts the ball in the back of the Sheffield United net, but for some reason the referee gives a penalty, which wasn't a penalty because there wasn't enough contact, in my opinion. And if he was going to give a penalty, he should allow play to develop a little bit and see what happens. United should have gotten a goal. As it was, they got a penalty, which made up for the fact that they would have scored anyway. Bruno Fernandes steps up and scores. And it looked like it was going to end 2-2, but on 81, Fernandes scores an absolute screamer with his left foot. And on 85, he squares it across the box for Rasmus Højlund to tap home. 4-2, United absolutely deserving winners on the night. Sheffield United, they gave it their all. They had a good go, but by God, they can't defend at all, as we know. Just to update, that is now 92 goals conceded in this this season so far, meaning that they are only behind Ipswich, who conceded 93 in a 42-game season, and Swindon, who conceded 100 in a 42-game season. But their goals allowed per game is by far the worst. They're conceding half a goal more per game than Ipswich. 2.21 for Ipswich, 2.71 for Sheffield United. Swindon conceded 2.38. So they're still conceding, you know, at a fairly significant rate more than that Swindon team. 92 goals conceded with four games left. And those four games are Newcastle away, which could be a hammering. If we go right back to the start of the season, Newcastle put eight past them at Bramall Lane. Then they play Forest home, then Everton away, and then Spurs at home, which again could well be a hammering. I just don't see any possibility they don't concede over 100 goals. Like, their goals conceded per game went up as a result of this one. They're on track right now to basically concede like 103 goals. Just shocking stuff. Absolutely shocking stuff. How are you that bad defensively? Final game of the night was Everton versus Liverpool. Everton were brilliant. Really good game plan. Calvert-Lewin had hit probably the best game he's ever had in his life and absolutely bullied Liverpool. Jarrod Branthwaite opened the scoring on 27 minutes. Everton probably should have been ahead before that. Calvert-Lewin missed a good chance. They had been awarded a penalty, which was then reversed because he'd been offside in the build-up. But Branthwaite scores after just horrific defending from Liverpool. Just absolutely horrific defending. They had multiple opportunities to clear the ball and failed to do so. Trent Alexander-Arnold, with one of the laziest attempted headers you'll ever see, completely missed the ball. Andy Robertson got a good block in and then fell asleep. The ball pinballed. Alexis McAllister was about to sweep the ball clear with his left foot. And for some reason, Ibu Konate stuck his leg out and deflected the ball across to Branthwaite. Alisson Becker did all he could to save it, but it wasn't enough. And in it went. And on 58 minutes, Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a really good back post header, but by Christ, Trent Alexander-Arnold should be ashamed of himself. Absolutely ashamed of himself. He was stood at the back post. He could see everything. He could see the ball. He could see what was happening to Van Dijk being blocked. And he could see Calvert-Lewin. You have two options there. Option one, you step out and you try to block the runner and impede his path, force him to go over the top of you if he wants to get to the ball. Option two is you step back in and you try and get yourself on the post or in the way so that any header might hit you. But Trent took special option number C. Number C, special option C. I think, did I do 1, 2, and C? This game has killed me, by the way. What he did was he decided to just stand where he was and then fill his pants as Calvert-Lewin jumped. He raised his arm and ducked his head, turning away like a flinch, a proper flinch. Absolute cowardice from Liverpool's vice captain. Shameful. Absolutely shameful. But Everton fully deserved all 3 points. Liverpool did miss some chances. They deserved nothing from the game. Let's go from the bottom up. Sheffield United, 16 points. We can just write them off. We have been writing them off. They're gone. Then it is a battle now between three teams for one survival spot. Burnley on 23 points, Luton on 25, Forest on 26. Do keep in mind, Forest are still appealing their points deduction, so potentially could get more points taken off them or could get some points taken back or given back. Everton now have 33 points. After having 8 points deducted, fair play. They've won 3 of their last 4 and they have a favourable run in. Everton are safe. Brentford of 35, they are safe. Palace of 39, they're actually safe. They have enough points now to stay in the division. But I don't think any of Forest, Luton or Burnley are even getting to the 33 Everton have. That will be 7 points from 4 games for Forest. 8 points from 4 games for Luton and 10 points from 4 games for Burnley. And Everton have a much better goal difference than all of them. 6 goals better off than Forest, 16 better off than Luton, and 20 better off than Burnley. Everton are safe. They basically have an 8-point lead over Luton right now. Sorry, a 9-point lead over Luton right now, an 8-point lead over Forest. With that goal difference, they're fine. Brentford, like I say, are fine. Palace, actually fine. Fulham, 42 points, nothing more to play for. Wolves, 43, nothing more to play for. Brighton, 44, but they do have 2 games in hand. They do obviously play tonight. They don't have anything to play for. They're not going to get into Europe, most likely. It would take some serious collapses above them. But I think they'll want a top half finish. Bournemouth, 45 points. Outstanding season for Andoni Iraola. When we consider that last season they took 39 points and still survived quite comfortably, obviously. But this has been much better than that. This is top half football. They might not finish there because obviously Brighton, a point behind 2 games in hand, could still overhaul them. So could Wolves, so could Fulham in theory, but absolutely outstanding what Iraola has done at Bournemouth this year. Chelsea, 47 points. Now, they've only played 32 games like Brighton, so they have 2 games in hand, and we will see how those go. It's just impossible to know with this team. Like, as I said, they their game on Tuesday, they played really well against the City in Cities and Arsenals, and then they just roll over for Arsenal, just get murdered and completely stop playing. West Ham, 48 points from 34 games. Most teams have played 34 games. I've highlighted the 2 that haven't so far, Chelsea and Brighton. The Toon, 50 points from 33 games. Manchester United, 53 points from 33 games. Spurs, 60 points from 32 games. So they still have a chance at top four, but right now it's a tough path. They've got to play Arsenal, Liverpool, and City between now and the end of the season. They do also have Burnley, Sheffield United, and Chelsea, but it's Chelsea away, which won't be that easy. And obviously Chelsea smashed them early in the season in that strange game. They do also have Burnley and Sheffield United. Aston Villa, 66 points from 34 games. So 6 points more than Villa, 2 games played more, but 5 goals better off. And City's games are, sorry, Spurs games in hand are Chelsea away and City at home, which are both very, very tough. Then it is City on 73 points, 32 games played. Then Liverpool on 74 and Arsenal on 77. Arsenal, of course, have a significant goal difference advantage over both. They also have the hardest last 4 games. Tottenham away, very difficult. Bournemouth home won't be easy, but it's Arsenal at home, they should win. United away, it just depends on which United turns up and who's fit for them. And Everton at home, which they should win. City, they've got Brighton tonight, which is tough enough. Forest away, should win. Wolves home, should win. Fulham away, should win. Spurs away is tough. West Ham home on the final day, they'll absolutely wallop. Liverpool, I would say, now no longer a threat to win the title. West Ham away, Spurs home, Villa away, Wolves home. They should win. They should win 3 of them, but I don't expect them to do much of anything. Yeah, not good. Not good. But I would still say City, it's their title to lose. They've got the games in hand. Win both games in hand, and they go to 79 points with 4 games left, and you just don't expect City to slip up from there. Tonight's game should be interesting. Brighton hosting City. Pressure now on City, to be fair, but we know that Man City deal very well with this type of pressure, and given they're out of the European Cup, I do think their focus will be massively back in on this game. Erling Haaland not playing in this game. I think they actually play a little bit better without him, to be totally honest. I know he's better than Alvarez. I think the team functions better with Alvarez. He is their only injury at the moment, which is a great situation to be in. Similar to, obviously, the Arsenal situation where Jurrien Timber is the only player out. Brighton ahead of tonight, no March, no Ferguson, no Hinchelwood, no Estupinan, all gone for the season. Matoma unlikely to be back this season. Lamptey out another few weeks, Milner out another few weeks, and Billy Gilmore out another few weeks. Also, Julio Enciso has a knock and is a doubt, but might make the bench. I think City to win is the easy pick here. Brighton have lost to Liverpool and to Arsenal in the not-so-distant past. If we look at the form table over the last 10 games, City are second. Brighton are 12th. Brighton's home form over their last 6 home games has them 8th. City's away form over the last 6 away games has them 2nd. So you'd absolutely be fancying Manchester City to do a number on Brighton. Last 10 games, City have scored 10 and conceded, sorry, City have scored, last 10 games, City have scored 22 and conceded 7. Brighton have scored 14 and conceded 13. So you would have to suggest that City, strong favourites to win tonight. And that's that. We'll take a break back after this. Right. Welcome back. So normally on Thursdays, I used to do listeners' questions. However, I have removed myself from the Anfield Index Discord for reasons that I won't get into. I have removed it. It's a wonderful community for the most part, but just better for my own mental health not to be reading some of the things that get said. There's a bit too much positivity at times when I don't feel like positivity is what's needed. Irrational rage is sometimes needed. And there's also just, you know, only so much time you should be spending on social media. And I already spend far too much time on Twitter. So I had to lose one of them. And unfortunately, the Discord had to be it. So now I just rely on Guy to tell me if there's anything in there that I need to know. On Twitter today, all the journalists have come out and said that Darwin Núñez was a signing that Jurgen Klopp pushed for, while the recruitment side wanted Christopher Nkunku. This was well known at the time. This isn't news. But it is a very interesting leak that I would imagine has come from a recently appointed sporting CEO. And I think we'll see a few more of these about some of the players that were signed by Klopp as opposed to the recruitment team. Like, for example, I would imagine we'll hear that in the January of 2022, in the middle of the 21-22 season, Liverpool's recruitment staff wanted to sign Bruno Guimarães, and Jurgen Klopp and Pep and Linders pushed for Luis Diaz. I would imagine we will hear that in January 2023, Liverpool's recruitment team wanted to sign Mohamed Kudus, and Pep and Linders, for the most part, pushed for Cody Gakpo. I believe we will hear that in the summer just gone, the recruitment team wanted to sign Alan Varela, and Jörg Schmatke and Jurgen Klopp insisted on Endo, and that the recruitment team wanted to sign Kefren Turam, and instead they signed Ryan Gravenberch because of Pep and Linders and Jurgen Klopp, obviously. So I think we'll hear a lot of that. So what I thought I'd do is take a look at all the Premier League teams. One big money signing at the club. If there is one, there might not be for some, but one big money signing at each club that they should probably look to move on from who hasn't really worked out. So for Arsenal, the obvious one will be Thomas Partey, but I don't believe they can sell him for reasons. So Gabriel Jesus would be the one. There's been a lot of talk that they want a striker. I think Kai Havertz is best as the nine. Obviously, he was bought to play as an eight. That hasn't worked out. So he's been repurposed back into the position he often played for Chelsea, and he is better there. Good enough to start? It depends. Good enough to start with Saka and Martinelli as the wide forwards? No. If Martinelli was more consistent, then yes. Yeah, if Martinelli's more consistent, then yes. So him as the nine means Jesus is pretty much rendered unneeded because he doesn't score enough and he's injured quite frequently. So let's say him. Liverpool will just stick with Darwin Núñez. I've defended him a lot. I can't defend him anymore. Manchester City. Jack Grealish is the obvious one. 100 million. He had a good 3 months last season. Other than that, he's been very, very poor. Very disappointing. Aston Villa. Phil Coutinho. I mean, I know they didn't pay huge money for him, but again, not all the clubs are paying huge money, so this is going to be relatively speaking, and also factor wages. So he'd be the obvious one for Villa. For Tottenham, I'm not a big Richarlison fan at all, to be honest. And, I mean, 60 million or whatever they paid for him was quite the overpay. And when I look at their squad, I mean, Brian Hill would be one maybe, but he didn't cost huge money. Lo Celso did cost big money, so maybe him instead. Let's go Lo Celso. and go with him because he's not a first choice player. He's not even, you know, really in the rotation, and he gets injured quite a bit. It hasn't gone well at Spurs, which is a shame because he's a really good player. A really, really good player. But he's not needed there. Manchester United, I mean, take your pick. Casemiro because of his age and wages, Sancho because of his wages and the fact that he hasn't performed, Anthony because he's absolutely garbage, and a terrible set of lads. We'll go with Anthony. We'll go with Anthony for Manchester United. The tune, Sandro Tonali? I think it's Sandro Tonali. When they signed him, I thought it was an odd one because there's a bit of overlap, a bit too much overlap between him and Bruno Guimarães. And they don't have the right mix of players around them to really make it that those two could play together regularly and have success. And obviously then he's been banned for quite a long time for the gambling thing. And there's talk of potentially another ban. So I think I'd go Sandro Tonali. Get whatever you can get out of that deal and move on. West Ham. It's an interesting one. Let's have a look at the squad and make a decision. They don't own Phillips, so not him. Max Cornet? I know it was only 20 million, but 20 million is still a significant chunk of money. Him or Danny Ings, maybe? Danny Ings is on pretty big money there. So maybe him, maybe Danny Ings. Cornet's been, no, it's Cornet. It's Max Cornet. He hasn't been good. He's probably on decent enough money. Let's get on from him. They don't have a ton of big money signings, and the ones they have made have pretty much worked out for them. So, you know, fair play. Where are we going next? Chelsea. Well, as with Manchester United, there is a significant amount of options here. Mykhailo Mudryk is the obvious one. But I'm going to reiterate what I've said before. I think Enzo Fernandez, not that he's not a very, very good player. He is. It's just that him and Caicedo doesn't work. And I think Caicedo is more married to Chelsea because of his agent than Enzo is. And I think you could move Enzo on and get really good money for him from PSG and then reinvest that into someone like João Neves. Bournemouth, there won't be a whole lot here because they don't make a ton of big money signings. But I think the obvious one is one they have out on loan at the moment, which is Hamed Traore. 20 million, it just hasn't worked out. It just hasn't worked out for him. It's a shame. He's a really talented footballer, but it just didn't work. So he's the obvious one there. Brighton and Hove Albion. Igor Julio's name jumps to me straight away. Like, Brighton have been garbage defensively this year and he still can't get regular games. Yeah, we'll go with Igor Julio. Wolves. Again, the obvious one is out on loan. It's Fabio Silva. Big money signing from Porto. Far too big a gamble. Sasa Kalajic would be another one you could probably look at. But he's torn his ACL again. The third time in 5 years. Poor lad has just had the most horrendous luck. We'll go with Fabio Silva from Wolves. Fulham. Again, not a club that's made a huge amount of big money signings. Maybe we're looking more at wages or something here. Yeah. I'm going to just say Adama Traore, because I reckon he's on pretty significant money there, and he has been pretty disastrous for them. So I'll say him. Crystal Palace, not too many, to be honest. A while ago, it would have been Mateta. I'll say Odson Edouard. Hasn't really worked out. He's a good player, no doubt. A very, very good player. But 6 goals, 5 goals, and 7 goals in 3 Premier League campaigns, it's not what you paid for. And again, they paid big money for him. So big money by their standards. I would say he's the one. Did I miss? No, I didn't. Brentford. Brentford are next. So I'm going to go Mikael Damsgaard, who had a really good game recently, but he has been very disappointing for them. Like 48 games now, no goals. I would say it's him. Yeah, I would say it's him. Diev. Beto. I think Beto. I really do. Andre Gomes is another option. They paid big money for him. I'm going to go Beto, though. Like, 3 league goals in 28 appearances, 5 in 35 in all competitions. Let's go with him forever. Nottingham Forest. Ibrahim Sanger jumps out. He hasn't been good this season. He can't get a run in the team. Now, they're married to each other. He's not been good because he can't get a run in the team. But then he can't get a run in the team because when he has gotten in, he hasn't played well. I do think if they just gave him a run of 10 to 12 games and let him find his groove, I think he'd be really good in midfield with Danilo, potentially in a midfield three with Danilo and Nicolas Dominguez. So I'm going to go with Sanger. Luton haven't made any big money signings, so it feels unfair to really point at anyone there. I don't think there is actually anyone at Luton, being completely honest. I think everyone they've signed has performed about as well as they could have hoped. Maybe you'd say Tim Krul, he's the backup keeper, he's probably on decent money. Let's just say him to have somebody. Moving on to Burnley. I mean, James Trafford's so young, I'd like to see him given longer. Halmar Ekdal, I haven't been overly impressed with. Was it 10, 11 million they paid for him? It might have been less. I might be wrong about that. No, they were in the Championship. So yeah, I'm definitely wrong. It was definitely less than that. I do like Aldekeel. I think there's a lot of talent there. He's young as well. They could keep him and Esteve. Maybe that's a pairing long term. I think they're both left-footed, but you could make that work for sure. Oh, it's Voet Veghorst. It's Voet Veghorst. Yeah, it's 100% Voet Veghorst. It hasn't worked out at Burnley. He's done pretty well at Hoffenheim. He's a good player. We'll go with him. And Sheffield United. Ollie McBurney. Ollie McBurney. Dreadful. Just dreadful. Absolutely woeful. Right. What I wanted to do quickly then was look at the main European leagues and just have a quick look ahead at what is up this weekend. So in La Liga, Real Madrid versus Real Sociedad, Friday night game, should be really good. Definitely one to watch. Saturday, Las Palmas versus Girona, Almeria versus Getafe, Alaves versus Celta Vigo, and Athletic Club de Bilbao going to Madrid to take on Atletico Madrid. Really, really looking forward to that one. On Sunday, Cadiz versus Mallorca, Granada versus Osasuna, Villarreal versus Rayo Vallecano, and then the Seville derby, Real Betis versus Sevilla. Then Monday night, Barcelona versus Valencia. So really, really good games in La Liga this weekend. And what I love is they're doing what the Premier League did during COVID. All of the games are staggered, so you can watch all of them. You can watch every one of the four Saturday games with no overlap. You can watch every one of the four Sunday games with no overlap. And you can obviously then watch the Friday night game and the Monday night. That is how a weekend's football should be scheduled, in my opinion. That is perfect. I think that is absolutely perfect. And they've been doing this for a while. It's a really, really good way to schedule your weekend. Absolutely outstanding stuff from La Liga, especially when, even if you just want to watch the four night games, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night, they're all really good. La Real versus Real Madrid should be really good. That is sixth place host to first. Atleti versus Athletic, that is fourth versus fifth. The Seville derby is just the Seville derby. It's 7th versus 12th, but that's not what's relevant here. What's relevant is it's the derby. And then Barca versus Valencia is 2nd versus 8th. That's really good. I can't wait for this weekend in La Liga. Serie A. Tomorrow, Frosinone take on Salernitana. Then on Saturday, you get Lecce versus Monza, Juve versus Milan, 5 p.m. kickoff. So you can watch that one before you watch the Atletico versus Athletic game, if that's what you want to do. Then Lazio versus Verona. Sunday, Inter versus Torino, Bologna versus Udinese, Napoli versus Roma, Atalanta versus Empoli, and Fiorentina versus Sassuolo. And again, they've staggered all these games so you can watch all of them. Starts at 11:30 UK time for Inter versus Torino. The final game is Fiorentina Sassuolo, 7:45 kickoff. And then Monday, it's Genoa versus Cagliari. So they're doing the same thing as the Spanish. Now, they're obviously more loading up the Sunday, only three games on the Saturday, as opposed to the 4-4 split that the Spaniards have done, but still really good. Next weekend is similar, except there's actually going to be two games on the Monday, as we've had a couple of times from them. And the only crossover is on the Sunday, Verona, Fiorentina and Empoli Frosinone there at the same time. Other than that, all the games are staggered. Really, really good. Into France we go. What do we have this weekend? Montpellier versus Nantes on Friday. PSG versus Le Havre Saturday night. Then Sunday, full day of games. Metz-Lille, Lorient, Toulouse, Clermont-Foot, Reims, Strasbourg, Nice. They're all, Metz-Lille is 12 o'clock. The other three are all 2 p.m. 4 p.m. Rennes versus Brest, 6 p.m. Lyon-Monaco, 8 p.m. Marseille-Lens. That's really good as well. Not as good as the Italians. The Italians aren't quite as good as the Spanish with it, but it's still really good. Looking forward to it. Where will we go next? We go to the Bundesliga. Far more likely to be just efficient to put them all on together. Yeah, so tomorrow, Bochum versus Hoffenheim. Saturday, all of these games are 2:30 kickoffs. Augsburg, Werder Bremen. Freiburg, Wolfsburg. RB Leipzig versus Dortmund should be a belter. And Bayern versus Eintracht Frankfurt. Then at 5:30, it's Leverkusen-Stuttgart. I would imagine, had they known in advance that Leverkusen would already have the title wrapped up, Leipzig versus Dortmund would have been in this slot, because they're the teams battling it out for the fourth and final Champions League spot. Sunday, Mönchengladbach versus Union Berlin, Mainz versus Cologne, and Darmstadt-Heidenheim, 2:30, 4:30, 6:30. So the Sunday is good. It's pretty good scheduling again. On to Portugal, where I remain invested, regardless of the fact that my club are doing a foolish thing, or appear to be. Tomorrow night, Gil Vicente, Arouca. Saturday, 3:30 kickoffs, Casapia versus Chavez and Vizela versus Rio Ave. 6 p.m. kickoff, Benfica versus Braga. That should be good. And then 8:30, Vitória versus Boa Vista should be a decent one. Sunday, 3:30, Porto Menens, Morense. 6 p.m., Estrela versus Famalicão. And 8:30, the reason I'm not going to watch the whole of the Seville Derby live is Porto versus Sporting. Big, big game. And a precursor to the cup final. Monday night, Estrela versus Ferenc. What else have we got this weekend? Let's check in Scotland. Scottish Premiership. Saturday, we have four 3 p.m. games. They are Livingston versus Ross County, Aberdeen versus Motherwell, St. Johnstone versus Hibs, Kilmarnock versus Hearts. Sunday, 12:30, St. Mirren versus Rangers, 3 p.m., Dundee versus Celtic. Obviously, those two games are, you know, very important in the title race. Where else can we check? The Eredivisie. Why not? Today at 5:30, there is Heerenveen versus PSV. If you missed it yesterday, Ajax drew 2-2 with Excelsior, yet another bad result for Ajax. They were 1-0 up, went 2-1 behind, went 1-0 up, then had a man sent off, then went 2-1 behind, and then equalised late on. And 20 beat Almeria. Also today, Go Ahead Eagles versus Feyenoord should be a good one. Then on Sunday, no Saturday games, on Sunday, NEC versus Alkmaar and Swola versus Heracles. They're both at 11:15. At 1:30, it's Sparta Rotterdam versus Volendam and Walwick versus Utrecht. And then at 3:45, it's Vitesse Arnhem versus Fortuna Sittard. Yeah, the games to watch, if you want to watch some games, are the games tonight, PSV and Feyenoord. Well, we might as well check in on Inverness Caledonia Thistle, see what Big Dunk is doing this weekend. Big Dunk is away to Dunfermline. Two games left. Big Dunk has dragged them out of the relegation playoff spot. Our both are relegated. It is now down to Inverness and Queen's Park as to who will go into the relegation playoff. Inverness played Dunfermline, who sits sixth, and Greenock Morton, who sit fifth. Queen's Park play Arbroath, so that's a big chance for them to win, and Airdrieonians, who are fourth. So could still go either way. 1 point between them, but Inverness with a much better goal difference. And that is your Big Dunk update, brought to you by Liberty Shield. That's what I'm going to use Liberty Shield to sponsor now. The Big Dunk upgrades, or update, upgrades, updates. We might as well throw in his win percentage while we're here. Did I mention that they lost at the... Oh, no. Wait a minute, I've lost myself. Hang on a sec. There we go. Inverness Caledonia Thistle. They lost to Raith Rovers at the weekend at 1-0 in Inverness, which makes this the perfect Liberty Shield segment, because the lads have had involvement with Raith Rovers in the past. So what that does for Big Dunk's winning percentage, because I know that's the only reason you listen all week, is 54 games in charge, 13 wins, 16 draws, 25 defeats, 24.07% win rate. At Inverness, it's 31 games, 11 wins, 10 draws, 10 defeats, 35.58. And we just need to revisit that glorious spell at Forest Green, where he oversaw 18 games, of which his team won 3 draws, 14 defeats, a 5.56% win rate. Magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. He started the downfall, really. They were going badly as it was, but my God, as a thing, things gone downhill. David Horseman, Troy Deeney, and now Steve Cotterill. Poor Steve Cotterill. Poor man just wanted a job. And look where he's landed. That's very unfortunate. Enjoy non-league football, though, Forest Green, which it is a shame. Like, it is a shame. I do admire the way they've gone about their business. I really do. And, you know, they've been promoted in the 17-18 season. They managed to secure promotion to the Football League for the first time. Did really well as soon as they came up. Finished fifth, lost in the playoffs. Again, following year, lost in the playoffs. In year three, automatic promotion. That might have been year four. But either way, automatic promotion into League One. Then obviously Rob Edwards leaves and everything just falls apart for them. And it's just been an absolute shocker the last 2 years. After such a really good run before that, like, they've done so well over those previous, what, four seasons? Let's have a look here. 2, 3, 4. 5 seasons in the Football League. 5 seasons. They got promoted at the end of 16-17. They finished 21st in 17-18 and just about survived. Then 5th, then 10th, then 6th. So that's 2 of 4 years in the playoffs, which is really good for a newly promoted team. And then they win the league. And then back-to-back seasons of abject failure. There's no other way to look at it. Abject failure. Right. I don't know how I ended up. How did I end up on Forest Green? Oh, Big Dunk, of course. Yeah, brought to you. Big Dunk, brought to you by Liberty Shield for all your VPN needs. I'll be back after this. Right, welcome back. So, hardly a glowing endorsement from Virgil van Dijk of Arne Slot, apparently Liverpool's favourite managerial contender because they're being cheap, said that his philosophy could fit, that he's one of the best Dutch managers, one of the better Dutch managers. Let's be clear, there are no good Dutch managers. So if Slot was an elite-level manager, which maybe he becomes, I would have thought van Dijk would have been more glowing about him. There are no good Dutch managers out there right now. So who else would van Dijk rate above him would be a question I'd like answered. Piece here that suggests Crystal Palace have put 60 million price tags on Eberechi Eze and Michael Olise. And I believe there's a buyout clause in Olise's contract for 65. And I'd be surprised if there wasn't similar for Eze. So that's a bit of a weird one. On to the gossip then. Manchester United are interested in Ivan Toney. It's 90minute.com. Consign that to your nearest bin. Tottenham could move for Toney if there is a lack of competition for a signature. I've been saying for a long time I thought Toney would have been a good Harry Kane replacement. They should have bought Victor Gyökeres last summer, but they didn't. Ivan Toney would make sense. Manchester United may let more than 12 players leave this summer, including Marcus Rashford and Casemiro. I don't see Rashford leaving. Mauricio Pochettino's future as Chelsea manager could depend on whether he can achieve European qualification for next season. Chelsea may be open to offers from Saudi Arabia for Raheem Sterling. Chelsea are open to offers for everybody. Newcastle are leading the race to sign Ousmane Diomande. No, they're not. They haven't got the money to do it under FFP. Tottenham are well placed to sign Conor Gallagher. I still don't see how that works. I don't see how it fits. Victor Osimhen is close to joining PSG. It doesn't really make sense. They've already got Randall Colomuani and Goncalo Ramos, but PSG don't make sense in any stretch. Arsenal have been linked with Ferland Mendy, while Liverpool, Manchester United and Newcastle are also interested. Liverpool are not interested in Ferland Mendy. Unai Emery is pushing Aston Villa to sign Nico Williams of Athletic Bilbao. That would be a good signing for them, without question. That would be quite dynamic to add to their team. Villa are also monitoring Crescencio Somerville, and again, that would make sense. Tottenham could offer Genoa the chance to sign Jed Spence in exchange for Albert Goodmanson. I don't see it because Spence has not done all that well. He's been okay, but it hasn't been great. Arsenal are prepared to accept offers of 20 to 25 million for Thomas Partey, who's 30, injury prone, and also reasons. Feyenoord have identified FC Twente manager Joseph Oosting as their top managerial candidate, one of their top managerial candidates, should they lose Arne Slot. West Ham have been in talks with Julian Lopetegui for months, with David Moyes' contract expiring, which is, it's really weird. It's really, really weird. Because Moyes claims he's been offered a new contract and will decide at the end of the season. Have West Ham now withdrawn that offer? Because what are they saying to these other managers? Listen, there might be a job, but there might not be. So what do you think? It's very, very weird. Newcastle are set to sign Lewis Hall in a permanent deal in the summer. That's not news. Why are you reporting that? Everybody's known there's an obligation to buy. Erik ten Hag will face a 25% pay cut with the club set to miss out on Champions League qualification. That's if he stays on as manager. And Bayern Munich are considering a move for Jonathan Tah. Christ alive. Right, that'll do. I'll see you tomorrow. Well, I technically won't see you tomorrow, but there'll be a podcast tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.